Does God want a separation of church and state? Should Christians be voting biblical principles? Does it really matter who you vote for? Join Pastor Jerry Cook as he endeavors to answer these and many other questions over the next hour on Politics in the Pulpit. And now, Pastor Jerry Cook.
Good afternoon and welcome to Politics in the Pulpit with your holy host, Pastor Jerry Cook, here on your hometown station, 98.1 FM and AM 1220. Hope you're doing well today. We've got two guests on tap for our program today. On the top of the hour, we've got Alexander Haberbusch with the Lex Rex Institute right here in Long Beach, California. He'll be joining us in just a few moments. And then at the bottom of the hour, Lord willing, unless there's a hitch, we've got Brad Dacus with Pacific Justice Institute who's going to call in as well. I want to just start off the top of the hour real quick here about a news story that I saw over the weekend that was rather disconcerting. And I've got a clip of it here that we'll be playing in just a second, but I don't know if you saw this. This is Hat Tip Right Scoop for those of you who watch that site or monitor that site. Democrats in the state of Colorado were having a hissy fit over a particular bill making indecent exposure to minors a felony. Now, I kind of thought that we all, depending on, you know, who cares about what party you're part of, whether you're Republican, Democrat, whatever, I would kind of think that all of us would agree that indecent exposure of any kind is wrong. And what is interesting is these Democrats in Colorado in particular were making this particular bill about everything else except indecent exposure. I want you to listen to this particular lawmaker make her case as to why this particular bill is wrong.
These types of laws have been used to ban drag shows, to target individuals who use the restroom of the sex that they identify with, a public restroom, to charge them with felony charges. I am very concerned about the attacks against the transgender community that are happening across the country. When I initially read this bill, it did not even come to mind, for me either, as an advocate. But as I've looked at the bills and as I've talked to my colleagues who are fighting these types of bills across the country, it's very clear to me that the language is very much mirrored in some of the laws that have been used to target members of our community because of who they are.
All this bill would do is basically make indecent exposure something that is a felony. I would think all of us would agree with that, but it seems like the Democrats in Colorado in particular are making this about everything under the sun, an attack on the transgender movement, dances in front of kids, all of the indecent thing that happens at these readings at the libraries and all this kind of stuff. Folks, what kind of insanity are we observing here? It is as if the book of Isaiah, the prophet, wrote, "Truth has fallen in the street," and it seems like there is no basic reality anymore. Everything is an attack on everything else, and Democrats are, in Colorado in particular, are against indecent exposure? I mean, this is strange. I want to bring in Alexander Haberbusch right now. Alexander is with the Lex Rex Institute here in Long Beach, California. Alexander, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for inviting me, Jerry.
Well, thanks for coming on. I'm getting over a head cold today, so half of my head feels like I'm in the bottom of a barrel right now.
Oh, gosh. Well, try to fill in then. I can never fill your shoes, but fill the airwaves at least.
Well, exactly. But I on the top of the program here, we talked about these. I don't know if you heard about this, Alexander, but there was this bill in Colorado where they were trying to make indecent exposure to minors a felony.
And pretty sensible.
I would think so.
I can't think of much of a reason to oppose that, but I guess some people did.
They did, and I guess some Democrats came up and started saying out loud why they thought that this was actually more of an attack on the transgendered community and all of the things that are happening at the libraries, you know, where the
Well, and she referred, I assume that person identifies by she, but she referred in that that clip that you played to her colleagues fighting these bills in other states. Now, I don't know what she means by these bills. I'm certainly not sure what she means by colleagues, because her colleagues really ought to be people who are on the legislature with her.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be people doing anything in other states. But, you know, maybe she's a member of some kind of national organization. You know, I hate to go the direction of conspiracy on this, so we'll try to avoid that. But, you know, she certainly knows some other people who are fighting what she calls similar bills in other states that use similar language to this one. Well, it's interesting she doesn't quote any of that language, and I'd be very curious to hear what it might be, because it's hard for me to imagine language in an indecent exposure bill that would have anything to do with the trans community.
Well, it is amazing how, in many ways, they're kind of showing their hands, right, Alex? Because they know that ultimately this is going to be a problem for them down the road. But nevertheless, for those who have never heard of you, why don't you tell them a little bit about LexRex Institute for those that are just listening today?
Sure. So I'm an attorney, and I work with LexRex Institute. That's an organization whose name is Latin for the law is king. That's what Lex Rex means, because the law is our only king in this country. Not Gavin Newsom, certainly not Joe Biden, the law, specifically our Constitution. And we are, and that's exactly what Lex Rex Institute is oriented toward, is upholding the Constitution in this country. So we are a full-service constitutional practice. We both advocate on behalf of the Constitution in cases for our clients, as well as educating the public through podcasts, YouTube Rumble videos, informative articles, everything like that. You can access all of that. Our central hub is lexrex.org. That's L-E-X-R-E-X.org. And we are a qualified 501c3 nonprofit, so I know tax day is just a little bit in the past now, but if you're looking forward to next year and need the tax-deductible donations, well, we can help you out there, and then you can join the fight for our country and for our constitutional rights.
Yeah. Well, last time we were talking, Alex, you had something to do with the Carrie Lake situation in Arizona, and I know you guys were doing something about there. Are you privy to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. Not too much development on that front. I know there hasn't been a briefing schedule. So that did get, after the Supreme Court heard our briefs, that did get pushed back to the lower court level. He told the judge he has to rehear this case and can't just dismiss some of the claims that Carrie Lake made because they were brought after the election. That was the reason they were dismissed originally. He said if it happens after the election, that's too late. You got to challenge it beforehand. Supreme Court told him that's wrong. You got to hear those claims anyway. So that's been sent back to the lower court, which has not yet set a briefing schedule. So that's all kind of on hold right now. And the Supreme Court's continuing to hear, because some of the other lawyers who were actually involved directly with Ms. Lake had a sanctions motion brought against them, and the Supreme Court's currently hearing that issue. Once that's resolved, everything else can be heard. Sorry, don't want to bog you guys down with all the boring procedural detail. Long way to say that it's not being heard yet.
Gotcha. And what do you think, if you were to put your prophet's hat on right now, what do you think the future holds for Carrie Lake? Obviously, she's not going to run for governor again, unless, of course, she does. But do you think maybe she's going to be vying for VP spot for Trump, or what do you think's going on?
Well, our brief filed before the Supreme Court, and it was actually, you know, interestingly, the Supreme Court of Arizona ruled on the grounds that we articulated, and only the grounds that we articulated. But our argument there is that the signature verification protocols used by Maricopa are defective as a matter of law.
Uh-huh.
So if the lower court judge abides by the law on this case, we think Carrie Lake can still be governor. In fact, we think that's the legally correct thing to happen here, assuming that a new election is held and that she wins that new election. So, you know, I'm going to say that as far as my hope for where Carrie Lake's going. I want her to be governor of Arizona.
Well, I'll be completely honest with you, Alex. When I saw her campaigning, and of course I saw the other person not campaigning, Katie Hobbs, basically using the same treatment that Biden used in 2020, which is the basement protocol. I was surprised on November when Carrie Lake was behind, and then ultimately lost by, you know, what is it, 17,000 votes, I think it was.
Fraction of a percent.
Yeah, exactly. And so you have this dynamic individual who's able to articulate her positions very well, and then the other person who didn't want to do anything. I mean, didn't want to be interviewed, didn't want to, was offended by reporters from her own party. But yet, there she sits in the governor's mansion in Arizona.
Yeah. Well, and maybe, you know, I think that from what I know of Ms. Legge, although, to be clear, my interest in this case has nothing to do with the candidates involved.
Sure.
If the Democrat had what appears to me been robbed of a victory, I'd go to bat for the Democrat.
Sure.
Because I believe in representative government. The person that gets the most votes should win.
Yeah.
But, you know, Carrie Legge, by all appearances, does appear to be a very able administrator. I'm sure that she's going places regardless of the outcome of this case.
Yeah. Wanted to talk to you about a bill that is right now in committee. It's in the Appropriations Committee right now. It's AB, Assembly Bill 315. It is Bauer Cahan from San Ramon, northern San Diego area. And it passed the Assembly Judiciary Committee on March 21st, and today the hearing in the Assembly Appropriation Committee was today. This bill would essentially prohibit and make an unfair business practice of making false or misleading advertisements or statements about the provision or lack of provision of abortion or pregnancy-related services. To me, this bill reads as if it wants to basically put the kibosh on all pro-life pregnancy centers. What say you, Alexander Haberbusch?
Well, I think you're right, and it's not the first time this state has tried to do this. Back in, I want to say, 2015.
You're right, 2015.
The state of California, I remember that because I worked on the case, but yeah. The state of California passed a bill that essentially required pro-life family planning centers to provide pro-abortion propaganda pamphlets.
Yeah.
We challenged that, or NIFLA challenged that, a group of pro-life advocates challenged that. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled, no, that's protected by free speech.
Yeah.
You cannot compel people to advertise for abortions. So, you know, this is kind of their attempt to go around that Supreme Court ruling by passing a very, very broad, what essentially amounts to anti-false advertising law, but with specific application to facilities that provide family planning services. So I think likely the intention of this bill, because it applies both to false and to misleading statements, I think the goal here is going to say that any family planning center that doesn't provide abortion as an option, so, you know, they list, here's what you can do with your baby. You could adopt. You could, you know, listing out all the different options for a baby. If they don't say abortion as one of those options, the argument here is, well, that's misleading.
Yeah.
So a cause of action arises against that family planning center under this bill. What I find especially troubling here, though, is we've already got false advertising laws in place. Those already apply to the provision of abortion services. What's different here is how broadly it applies, but more significantly, the penalties involved. So the law specifically says if it gets passed the way that it currently reads, it allows for a private right of action. So, you know, the woman who was conceivably misled could sue over this.
Yeah.
And it allows her to recover a penalty, and it has a minimum penalty, not a maximum, so minimum penalty of $1,000. Plus actual damages, plus damages from emotional distress, plus recovery of attorney's fees.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I don't know of any other law like this. This is the kind of law that attorneys like me would kill for most of the time, because this allows us to recover all kinds of money from a case that, you know, ordinarily just wouldn't have that much money in the case. It wouldn't be worth bringing. But they're really incentivizing lawsuits on this issue. They're telling law firms, hey, if you want a big payday, bring one of these lawsuits, which is a very dangerous thing to do, because that's going to get a lot of litigation against these family planning centers.
Yeah, and do you think this thing's going to pass? I mean, unfortunately, we live in a very deep, deep blue state. We have a governor that's committed to abortion. Do you think this thing's going to pass, Alexander?
I suspect it probably will. I don't know if it'll pass in its current form. You know, looking at this penalties section, it's just outrageous. I would not be surprised to see that amended a little bit before it goes to the governor.
Yeah.
I would think that, you know, anybody looking at that would see that's just way too excessive.
Yeah.
Even a very far left person.
Yeah, I've got pastor friends. Yeah, I've got pastor friends right now that are in Sacramento hearing this bill going through the Appropriations Committee. And, you know, they're really trying to advocate for this bill to at least be amended. Well, they want the bill completely, you know, shut down, but, you know, at least amend this thing. But even in its amended form, obviously they're going to do their best to go after pro-life pregnancy centers, no doubt.
The other thing here that I think is particularly egregious is it applies both to services that are offered for a fee as well as free services.
Huh.
So anybody offering free family planning or pregnancy-related services, well, that's a very, that could be read very, very broadly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are churches offering pregnancy-related services? They certainly help out pregnant mothers,
sure.
Right? And churches aren't going to tell you there's an option to get an abortion, at least I would hope most wouldn't.
Yeah.
there's just a real potential of abuse here. And not only is it a potential, I think it's incentivized because of the penalties here.
Yeah. I think the broad way that this bill is written would lead to those problems. And I think
yes.
They're kind of, it's written into the bill in anticipation that these would be the problems.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you're right. I mean, it's either negligent, recklessly negligent that somebody would include these kind of provisions, or it's their goal.
Yeah, no, exactly. Let me throw something else at you real quick, Alex. This is maybe not necessarily up either one of our professional ideas here, but New York passes gas ban in new buildings, strain on electricity grid. Just a few months ago, I think you probably read in Breitbart or some of these other news sites where there was an attempt by the Biden administration to somehow ban gas stoves, and then, of course, they came out and said, oh, no, we're not going to do that. But now here we have like a backdoor way of trying to do this, where New York, in particular, passes this bill that says any new buildings, any new structures, will now have to have electrical stuff in their houses instead of gas. What do you think they're trying to do here?
I don't know. Maybe penalize Russia? No, it's... Honestly, with most of this environmentalist stuff, it's very hard to see what their motivation is other than just putting different sectors of the economy out of business.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of these environmental laws stopped being about the environment a long time ago. And you got to kind of follow the money on this stuff. Without knowing a little bit more detail about who's advocating for this in New York, who the current providers are, and, you know, who's friends with legislators, it's going to be hard to give a clear answer to that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's some motivation here.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, Catherine Hochul, being the governor of New York, just a nightmare for the residents there. As you know, living in California, that there's just been this mass exodus of people out of California. Same thing with New York, same thing with Illinois and some other blue states. And I'm just wondering, at what point do they realize that their own policies are causing the mass exodus? But, of course, they're never going to acknowledge that.
No, not as long as it doesn't make too much of a dent in their tax revenue. I think once it starts to hurt their tax revenue a bit, they might notice.
Yeah, exactly. Well, May 22nd and 23rd of this month, May, we have our Lex Rex conference right here. This is the first one we've ever done in 21 years of Freedom's Way Baptist history. And we're glad to know that some folks from Lex Rex Institute right here in Long Beach are going to be attending. And
yeah, thank you.
I'm really excited about what Pastor Jared Longshore is going to say, even though technically I've given him the topics. Ha-ha. But the fact is, you know, we've never had any kind of meeting like this before, and I'm really hoping that it'll be a blessing to the pastors who attend. Go ahead and give some information about LexRex Institute for folks that want to get a hold of you. We're at the bottom of the hour here. We're going to be cutting off in just a second. So tell us a little bit more about LexRex and how people can get a hold of you, Alexander.
Yeah, so once again, we're an organization dedicated to constitutional accountability for government officials. We want to hold everyone to their sworn duty to the Constitution. And really, our central hub is LexRex.org, LexRex.org. From there, you can link to our YouTube videos, which are both educational and we hope entertaining, although with legal stuff, it can be a challenge. And then our podcast, which we know is a lot of fun, you can find that on the website as well. So your central hub for all this stuff is going to be LexRex.org. If you do have a case, you're interested in getting legal help, There's a legal help tab on that website. You could fill out our form, and somebody will get back to you within 24 hours. And that should pretty much do it. Go to LexRex.org, and you can learn more.
And you're not handing out free books by Samuel Rutherford?
Well, not for free, but if you make a donation, maybe we can work something out.
Well, thank you, Alex, for joining us today on Politics in the Pulpit. We're looking forward to having you back here the first Wednesday of June. And Lord willing, we'll see you in a few weeks right up here in Santa Clarita.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Jerry, and I look forward to see you then.
Thank you, sir. You have a great day.
All right, you too.
You're listening to Politics in the Pulpit here on your hometown station. When we come back in just a few moments, we'll have Brad Dacus from Pacific Justice Institute. We'll catch in just a few moments. We're back here live on Politics in the Pulpit on your hometown station, 98.1 FM and AM 1220. It was great speaking to Alex Haberbusch there with the LexRex Institute right here in Long Beach, California. We right now have Brad Dacus with Pacific Justice Institute. Brad, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Pastor Jerry. Thanks for letting me be on your program. I really appreciate it.
Where are we today? Are we in California? Are we somewhere in the nation? Where are we?
Today I'm in California.
I'm glad that you haven't contributed to the mass exodus, but you're staying here.
We have Pacific Justice Institute. In fact, we have six offices in California: three in Northern California, three in Southern. And we're really working hard to making sure that everyone's getting the help that they need when it comes to religious freedom, parents' rights, and the safety of life.
Do you have six offices here because we have an especially high amount of problems here in California?
Actually, that's exactly why we open offices as we need to respond to increasing cases and caseload. So it's very revealing as to how intense things are here in the state of California. But we do all our work without charge and work hard to make sure that everyone gets help, that no one's left on the side of the road, so we're unique and that we don't just cherry-pick a few cases. So to do that, we have to have the offices and the manpower, and by God's grace, we're able to get it done.
Well, thanks, Brad, for all that you do. I was talking to Alexander Haberbusch just a few minutes ago about AB 315, and I'd mentioned that AB 315, which basically would prohibit and make an unfair business practice of making false or misleading advertisements or statements about the provision or lack of provision of abortion and pregnancy-related services. This is actually in the Appropriations Committee right now as we speak. I've got a pastor that just texted me and said this bill is right now in front of the Appropriations Committee. We're praying and hoping that it either gets revoked, pulled, or heavily amended, because obviously this bill will be passed by this very blue governor, no doubt. But what does Brad say about AB 315 and this notion that essentially this bill just wants to kill pro-life pregnancy centers here in California?
Yeah, well, this legislation, we at Pacific Justice waited on this with a legal opinion, basically just dicing and slicing it. We pointed out that AB 315 continues the ill-conceived recent trend of the legislature to advance measures which cannot possibly pass constitutional muster. It's ideologically driven, internally inconsistent, inherently invalid. It's also deeply inequitable in that taxpayers have been and will continue to be, if it's enacted, forced to foot the bill for a futile legal defense just so politicians can appease their own financial backers.
Hmm. Yeah, that's unfortunate because we've got a pregnancy center right here in the city where I minister, and obviously they're scared to death that this bill comes through because obviously they feel that the whole misinformation, disinformation mantra that the left likes to throw out there is basically going to be weaponized against them.
Yeah, exactly. It's somewhat of a revenge, I guess, against the red states that have passed legislation limiting abortion clinics to continuing what they're doing at the risk of the health and safety, much less also, of course, the well-being of the preborn. So these rogue attorney generals that are just beholden for political reasons are attacking pro-life clinics. We're defending two large pro-life clinics in Northern California, the two largest in the state, that are being bombarded with, you know, inquiries and investigations, even though there's nothing against them. And now we have this legislation which would codify it easily, not just with government coming down and pouncing on pro-life clinics and helping women, but also making it easy for private parties in civil lawsuits to be able to have a private right of action to do the same. And we at Pacific Justice, we stand ready, as we've always been, to represent and defend without charge any pro-life clinic that has their First Amendment rights challenged. And this is a clear, would be a clear blatant violation of free speech and First Amendment rights. It's targeting one type of speech, specifically pro-life speech, pro-life clinics. That's what they're targeting. That's unconstitutional. And also the fact that it's void for vagueness. It's ambiguous. It's not, you know, it's just, it leaves open a many different angles of attack pursuant to the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's put on our different hat here for a quick second, Brad. It's been a little over a month now since the whole shooting in the state of Tennessee in the Covenant Presbyterian School there, where three children and three adults were killed by this trans shooter. It just came across the wire today that the Nashville police are going to delay the release of the trans shooter's manifesto over what they're saying is pending litigation. First of all, why do you think they're delaying the manifesto when usually all manifestos get put out pretty soon, like within 48 hours? And what do they mean by pending litigation?
Yeah, that's a good question, because the shooter was killed. The shooter's dead.
Yeah.
You know, as far as criminal prosecution, you know, let's say find someone who was an accomplice, that assisted, a co-conspirator, if you will. I don't see anything on the criminal side here. As far as other, like, pending litigation, maybe they're referring to civil, some kind of civil action, civil litigation. But even then, I don't see anything coming down from the federal government against the school.
Yeah.
So it's really peculiar there. I mean, unless they think that maybe some parents are going to file a private civil lawsuit. But even then, the government has no business withholding information like that that is significant and material, not just for the civil litigation. If that exists, the government needs to release that. Those parties need to have that information. To what extent does it show that the school, you know, foresaw or knew or had noticed that this was going to happen? They're going to have to release that manifesto. So to me, and I'm sure to you, it's fairly obvious, this is being withheld for political reasons. Because in that manifesto, I'm willing to bet, I may be wrong, is information dealing with the transgender movement, condemning maybe messages of hate, condemning this private Christian school for their biblical worldview. This child, or now an adult, had attended that Christian school, and I'm sure that is a part of the animosity. It's driven by the transgender movement, the transgender deception that this unfortunate person had in their mind, and mental illness, and I think that they don't want to have a bad rap, if you will, or a bad PR, more likely, to the transgender movement by releasing how dangerous someone can be who has this, as he's really swallowed the pill, if you will, of that very radical hate-filled movement.
Yeah, because obviously anybody can look at this and say to themselves, if had this been just a white male conservative that just happened to have pro-Trump, you know, stuff on his Facebook or whatever, or conservative stuff, you know, on his Facebook, that manifesto would have been out within 48 hours, if not sooner.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And people need to also understand that that it's understood based on what's been released is that this person, she was having hormone shots, testosterone injections. And, you know, I think that the reality, and many people who are transgender who have that kind of confusion and deception, they have often other mental issues involved. Apparently she has reportedly had some other mental issues. And, you know, this information should not be hidden people should be aware of that. And also, I think it gives a greater understanding of transgenders in terms of, you know, how serious this is when you have a female body injected with lots of testosterone, which precipitates sort of an aggressive, desire to sometimes to lash out. We've heard stories where weightlifters get steroid or testosterone injections, and that can cause them to do things they otherwise wouldn't. Getting this information out so that people have an understanding not only of her, but of situations like this that could precipitate in the future from these elements, I think is very important for the public good. We need to let it rise to the surface, let the people know what's involved, and so to bring better understanding of what we're dealing with. We're dealing with potentially people like this person involved in this horrific act against children.
Is Pacific Justice Institute right now got any cases where this whole transgender thing has kind of crept its head into some things where maybe, for instance, parents are suing a school district or something like that for not telling them that their kid was, transitioning while at school, and they're not being, not being honest with the parents and things of that nature. Is Pacific Justice Institute doing anything like that?
Yes. Yes, we are. In fact, there's one case in particular right now. We haven't filed it yet, but it's dealing with exactly that scenario where a child was being groomed by a public school, and the parents were lied to, were not made aware of it, and now the child is facing serious consequences and injury because of this public school and school districts. Unfortunately, school districts have these policies in many places across the country. That's why I'm glad we have 29 offices in 23 states. We have other cases like this, dealing also with the pronoun mandates in schools.
Yeah.
And dealing with teachers needing defense. We've got those cases all over the country as well. So it's just exploding. The good news is God, by His grace, has allowed us to have the ground game, if you will, with the offices and the attorneys and the media to be able to make a difference and to make sure these people are all getting the help that they need.
Yeah. I'm sure you've probably heard about some of these state house insurrections that have happened over the course of the last few weeks. I mean, we had the Tennessee legislature a few weeks ago. There was the Montana state legislature with this elected trans activist that was barred from the state legislature, but then had to be brought back in. And then there was this Texas situation at the state capitol in Austin just yesterday, and it was all based upon legislation pending on whether or not to allow some of these affirming care or medical affirming care for people that want to transition. Did you have anything to do, not necessarily in the transgender thing, but did you have something to do with the one in Texas?
Yeah, I wasn't there 2 days ago, but I was there a week and a half ago. Uh-huh. and also 3 weeks ago. But a week and a half ago, I was there in Austin, Texas, at the state capitol, brought in to testify as a constitutional expert witness regarding the constitutionality of putting in up 10 commandments in every school classroom in the
sure.
state of Texas. It looks like it's going through. The other was to allow local school districts the freedom to decide if they want to pay to have chaplains in their school districts. And it looks like both of those are moving ahead to being passed. Nothing like we'd see that, like that in California. I think we'd, after a revival, we might see something like that in California. But so we're seeing some great things passing and legislatively in red states like Texas. But while I was there, there was a massive number who, not outside, but actually entered into the Capitol legislative building right through the middle, just yelling and screaming en masse, and I think an attempt to try to shake up, intimidate, and disturb ongoing hearings and legislative session. It was very, very troubling to see that. And I told the person next to me, I said, what I'm really hearing here is people screaming in desperation, knowing that they're about to have their not to get what they want, and in fact be pushed back. when I was testifying in favor of the chaplain program to be allowed, someone from the other side was a transgender, a biological man, transgender, and he came up to testify against it, and he said, he goes, look, I'm a school counselor. And, you know, I'm providing the kids what they really need. We don't need chaplains.
Wow.
And
that's helpful.
And I just, I looked at that, and I thought, you know, what you did was so compelling to get this our legislation passed.
Yeah.
Because basically what you're saying is these kids need to be able to have another choice, a reasonable, level-headed choice, because they cannot count on the school counselors, even in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
And it was interesting how that happened. And that to actually help boost the case and get it out of committee, or get the bill out of committee, and I think it's going to pass.
Yeah, well, I hope so too. And there's a video going around on the internet about the Texas little insurrection that occurred there, and I guess they realized that the state police in Texas don't fool around with guys like that, so they put the kibosh on it relatively quickly. And it's kind of in a lot of ways a funny video to watch, because obviously that's the way we want our law enforcement to act. We want them to act swiftly, and we want them to act with sternness and put these little fires out. But you know, being that you're an attorney, you understand double speak. And what I mean by that is to use euphemistic terms or euphemistic phrases to cover up what you actually mean. For instance, you know, I would say abortion is murder, but of course the pro-choice side would say this is pro-choice. This is a decision for a mother to make with a daughter, with a doctor. Excuse me. You've got the transgender movement. They say this is child-affirming care. They have their euphemistic terms to cover up the actual,
right?
The actual thing, and
right.
And I wish people would just get past the euphemism and just say the real thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's not gender affirming care; it's gender confusion is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Is And it's not care, it's destruction, gender confusion, you know, whatever, you know.
Exactly.
The tactics, you know, exactly. And then as far as on abortion, they say it's reproductive pregnancy or women's reproductive health centers.
Yeah.
Well, reproductive health, it's reproductive destruction centers. you're killing babies.
Yeah,
you're preventing reproduction. You're preventing pregnancy. So you're right. What they say is it's also like, you know, not to be, you know, political, but to make the point though, it's like you know, the Inflation Act. You know, that was
the Reduction Act.
Yeah, Inflation Reduction Act. It's the opposite of what it was.
Of course,
it was printing out over $1 trillion of government spending, which caused more inflation and is now causing our country to go into a even more probably a serious recession than would have otherwise.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's really insane to see how they call it one thing, but it really means the other. It's just it's like George Orwell's 1984 all over again.
Exactly. Hey, real quick, Brad, give everybody what Pacific Justice Institute, how they can get a hold of you, and what they need to do to support you.
You bet. If they want to support us, we do. It's tax deductible. And we make sure everyone gets help. And just go to our website, pji.org, pji.org. And we have our big celebration of justice coming up October 28th with Kaylee McEnany. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. If people want to get tickets to that also, they can do that on our website, pji.org. And they also sign up to get our newsletter, our once-a-week e-newsletter, talking about our many cases. We have over 150 cases in active litigation across the country. We have more than any other organization of our kind, and we're here to serve anyone listening to this broadcast right now without charge. Just contact our office through pji.org.
Well, thank you, Brad, for joining us today on Politics in the Pulp, and thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we'll be back here in just a minute on your hometown station. All right, we're back here on Politics in the Pulpit with your Holy Host, Pastor Jerry Cook. Again, I just want to thank you for tuning in today. I apologize again. I'm kind of in the middle of a head cold here. I think I'm on the lee side of it right now, but it's kind of affecting my train of thought a little bit, so forgive me if I seem like I wander a bit today. It was great to have at least two guests with me, so obviously asking them questions, it allowed them to basically run the show for me, so that was kind of a good thing. But Alexander Habibirsch with LexRex Institute is always a pleasure. He will always be on our show the first Wednesday of every month, as he represents the LexRex Institute there in Long Beach. And, of course, Brad, he's no stranger to us here on Politics in the Pulpit and no stranger to our church, Freedom's Way Baptist, as he's spoken for us several times. And Lord willing, he'll be with us again here real soon. But both of those institutes, Pacific Justice and LexRex, are worthy of your support. And again, if you're a church, if you're a believer, if you're somebody out there that's a constitutional individual who's being harassed for your faith or for your constitutional rights, both of those organizations will step in and support you and will represent you pro bono. So we're thankful for both of those organizations that are out there. Let me just give you a few shameless plugs here as we kind of step out of the show today. If you're looking for a church where woke Christianity goes to die, I encourage you to come to Freedom's Way Baptist Church. You can check us out on freedomswaybaptistchurch.org, and you can look at our website, look at some past sermons there. I think we've got a YouTube site on Freedom's Way Baptist Church YouTube, and you can check out past sermons if you just want a little flavor of what you're about to get into. Also, if you're looking for a school that is going to educate your kids, not indoctrinate your kids, I'd encourage you to give Lighthouse Christian Academy a call. Lighthouse Christian Academy, they are right there on the campus of Freedom's Way Baptist Church, and Christine Aragon will be your contact individual there for Lighthouse Christian Academy, and you can actually find the link to Lighthouse Christian Academy right on freedomswaybaptistchurch.org. You heard me saying to Alexander earlier from LexRex that we at our church will be hosting a LexRex conference where the law is king. Again, a reference to an old Samuel Rutherford book written in the mid-1700s. And Jared Longshore from Christ Church in Moscow, Idaho, will be our featured speaker for Monday night at 7 o'clock and Tuesday morning at 9:30. Would love to have you come and support both of those services or one of those services if you can. Also, we have finally gotten a few individuals booked for the show for the rest of May. We had some folks cancel on us, and of course that happens, unfortunately, from time to time. But some of you know John Hatami, who is running against George Gascon here in Los Angeles County. He has agreed to finally come on May 31st. He will be on the show at 2 p.m. He'll be in the studio. And if you are looking to unseat George Gascon, then I would encourage you to listen to that show and call some friends and get some folks to listen in, because John has got a lot of good things to say. And he's actually a part of the district attorney offices here that filed against Gascon over the course of the last couple of years. So I encourage you to listen in on that show. We also have several other individuals that are running here in the state of California that we've booked for the month of May. I know that Patrick Lee Gibson will be on our show. I believe it'll be next Wednesday, and he's running for California State Assembly District 40. And that, of course, is where Pilar is now representing. She, of course, won against Suzette Martinez Valadares last November. And so Patrick Lee Gibson will be with us next Wednesday. And then we also have with us Lucy Vlotsky, who will be coming either the end of May or early part of June. So we're looking forward to having a role in at least giving some good exposure to these folks who are running for various assembly seats. And of course, we had Eric Early last Wednesday, and we had a great time with him, and a lot of you folks gave some good positive feedback on him as well. So don't forget to tune into some of those shows and support these individuals as well if you have an opportunity to throw some money their way and make sure that they're well-funded, because obviously we know the other side is funded very, very well. Again, thank you for tuning in today on Politics in the Pulpit here on your hometown station. I'm your holy host, Pastor Jerry Cook, saying thank you again. We'll catch you next week as we have Patrick Lee Gibson on the show running for the 40th Assembly District. Take care.
You've been listening to Politics in the Pulpit with Pastor Jerry Cook. Join us every Wednesday at 2 p.m. right here on your hometown station, KHTS. You can also join Pastor Jerry every Sunday at Freedom's Way Baptist Church in Castaic. For more information, find us on the web at www.freedomswaybaptistchurch.com. That's www.freedomswaybaptistchurch.com, or call us 661-714-5650. That's 661-714-5650. Thanks for listening. God bless, and have a blessed day.